Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And the whole podcast is sponsored, again, by Simply Safe Home Security. Right now, you can get $100 off the purchase of your brand new Simply Safe Home Security system, simplysafe.com/ricochet. More on them later. Jim, let's start with the good martini. And in case our listeners haven't noticed, and I'm guessing they have if they listen to us regularly, Washington is a little bit chaotic right now. But the good news is that that doesn't seem to be affecting investors or Wall Street in general. New York Times. Despite the disorder in Washington with a revolving door at the White House and roadblocks on Capitol Hill, Wall Street and corporate America are booming. The disconnect was evident Wednesday as the Dow Jones Industrial Average passed the 22,000 mark, a new high. At the same time, blue chips like Apple, Caterpillar, and U.S. Steel have all reported strong earnings in recent weeks that surpassed analyst forecasts. Quote, none of the soap opera in Washington matters, said Frank Sullivan, chief executive of RPM International, a Cleveland-based maker of specialty coatings and sealants like Rust-Oleum. Quote, nobody in business cares about who talked to who in Russia. What does matter, Mr. Sullivan said, is stronger global demand in heavy industries like mining and oil and gas, a weaker dollar that helps exporters, and a lighter regulatory touch by the new administration. Now, Wall Street was expecting Congress to actually get something done on Obamacare, tax reform, infrastructure. But even without that, the New York Times reports that things are working pretty well here. Quote, but a market surge based on political hopes has been replaced by one more firmly grounded in the financial realm. Besides steady economic growth or less regulation, investors also have been encouraged by the loose reins of central banks like the Federal Reserve, which have helped keep interest rates not far above their historic lows. Inflation, too, remains tame, with price increases in recent months actually falling short of the Fed's target. So, Jim, miracle of miracles, we don't need Washington to provide financial and economic success.
Yeah, we should now let me begin with all the appropriate caveats. If there's any lesson of the Obama era, it is that Wall Street success is not necessarily translate to, let's if not broad economic success, and let's say economic prosperity that everybody feels across the country. I'm sure there are lots of Americans who feel like they are being left behind. A couple of weeks ago, or a couple of days ago in the morning, Joel at the end, I said, you know, you really should get a 401k or an IRA. And somebody said, Jim, why are you giving investing advice? I'm not really sure that counts. Like, you should have savings. You know, you should put money away for retirement. You should have one of those things because there are certain tax advantages and they're a very good way. They accumulate interest. You put a little bit of money away each time and then it builds up and eventually you have a nice little nest egg for later on in life. I don't think that's really controversial, high risk investment advice. But remember, past performance is not indicative of future advice. So keep that in mind. But having said that, if you have a 401k or an IRA or something like that, and you've been checking it lately, you've probably been feeling really good every time you you check it because the Dow has passed 22,000 and the other markets are generally enjoying a similar kind of boom. And yes, it very much this took off after Trump's election. Businesses expected that the Trump era was going to be full of tax cuts and repealing regulations, and happy days were here again for a grand economic boom. It hasn't quite gone that way, and that kind of points to our third crazy martini. But having said that, the nice thing is we are seeing some regulations get repealed. And I wonder if businesses kind of know, okay, Washington's probably not going to do anything crazy over the next couple of days. You know, businesses had to adjust to the sweeping changes of Obamacare, the tax hikes that were enacted early on in Obama's term. And you always kind of had this regulation. You never knew when there's going to be some new EPA regulation or some new Occupational Safety and Hazard Administration change. There was all Obama's Washington could come along and make a sweeping change with very little warning, cooked up by some progressives, and all of a sudden your business was in trouble. And that was a big fueling, certainly the economic wing of the Tea Party movement was heavily driven by this. People who felt like they'd built a business and felt like it was at risk because of that. Maybe having Washington in gridlock is good for business. They're not worried about some crazy idea coming down the pike and being enacted. Obviously, there are certain changes we would like to see, but it's nice to see, at least for those who are investing, a certain amount of success and prosperity that we certainly will hope will trickle down People who are feeling more confident about their future are more likely to spend a little bit. They spend a little bit. The sales are up. People hire and things like that. So some good economic news, not perfect outlook for things, but it's nice to know that this was not hanging on one or two pieces of legislation being passed, and that what may have started as a potential economic boom is building its own momentum based on more broad-based and solid economic factors, not an expectation of what will happen, but instead what actually is happening in the global economy.
And credit where credit is due as we exit the first martini. While a lot of these factors are beyond the scope of Washington, one of the things the article did mention was the lighter regulatory touch by the new administration. So if that has been a contributing factor to greater wealth accumulation in the 401ks and in the stock market in general, which it probably has, kudos to the Trump administration for doing so. All right, on to the bad martini now, and this is kind of a double-barreled bad, but this is the story that has all the pearls being clutched in Washington this morning. Jim, from the Washington Post, President Trump made building a wall along the southern U.S. border and forcing Mexico to pay for it core pledges of his campaign. But in his first White House call with Mexico's president, Trump described his vow to charge Mexico as a growing political problem, pressuring the Mexican leader to stop saying publicly that his government would never pay. Quote, "You cannot say that to the press," Trump said repeatedly, according to a transcript of the January 27th call obtained by the Washington Post. Trump made clear that he realized the funding would have to come from other sources, but threatened to cut off contact if Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto continued to make defiant statements. "The funding," quote, "will work out in the formula somehow," Trump said, adding later that, quote, "it will come out in the wash, and that is okay. But if you are going to say that Mexico is not going to pay for the wall, then I do not want to meet with you guys anymore because I cannot live with that." He described the wall as the least important thing we are talking about, but politically this might be the most important. Now, another conversation we heard a little bit about at the time was one that didn't go well at all with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. The Post story says that became particularly acrimonious. Quote, "I have had it," Trump erupted after the two argued about an agreement on refugees. Quote, "I've been making these calls all day, and this is the most unpleasant call all day." So there's that aspect of this, Jim, where Trump appears to be a little bit green in some of these international conversations. But here's the other bad part of this. The White House declined to comment on this. An official familiar with both conversations who refused to speak on the record because the president's calls have not been declassified said the president is a tough negotiator who is always looking to make the best possible deals for the American people. Both documents obtained by the Post contain notes indicating they were reviewed and classified by retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg Jr., who serves as Chief of Staff on the National Security Council. So, Jim, some crimes being committed here, in addition to the fact that Trump was not exactly ready for these calls, it would appear.
Yeah, let's begin with the president and then work out from there. Hopefully his interactions with world leaders are running a little more smoothly these days. Obviously, it sounded like the he's getting along a little better with Macron being invited for the Bastille Day parade. The presidency has a learning curve, and it's not surprising that there'd be some bumps in the road early on. Having said that, the president really comes across as being spectacularly, not just uninformed, but I think unprepared. Traditionally in the White House, they have people to do this, Mr. President, whether it's of the intelligence community or from the State Department or something like that. There are people there to brief you what is on the mind of that other world leader, what they're likely to be asking about. Usually there's a decent amount of preparation work that is done between national leaders before they meet or have a conversation like this. There's really almost no excuse, and Trump seems to live down to the worst stereotype of him, of a guy who's only intermittently paying attention, doesn't know what he's talking about, keeps coming back to talking about his election win, makes this weird comment. Even if you want to say the state of New Hampshire has a serious drug problem with opioid addiction and we need to address it, I don't think you need to call the state a drug-infested den while speaking to the leader of Mexico. Republican voters and their Republican leaders, how are they supposed to react to that? Oh, yes, you're right, Mr. President. We're just the armpit of the country right now. No, they're offended. The president, having said that, having this on the front page of the Washington Post is not good for anyone. It is not good for the country. If you are any foreign leader, you sure as heck are not going to speak your mind openly and clearly, or even really say anything potentially controversial in a phone conversation with the President of the United States, because there's no guarantee that somebody in the White House will not leak this to the Washington Post. Presidents need to be able to have those frank, full discussions behind closed doors, and this White House can't make that guarantee. And as much as, you know, there are times when Trump is fuming about leaks and using it as a distraction for his own problems or for other issues, look, this is a legitimate, serious breach of national security. This is against the law. Whoever did it presumably did it to embarrass the president. And my sense would be, if you really want to, if you want to embarrass the president, quit your job in the White House and go work for the DNC. Go work somewhere else. There are plenty of places who would probably be happy to have you. The president deserves, even on his worst days, even President Obama deserved White House staff that are there to help him, that are there to help him enact his agenda, and who are not seeking to sabotage from within. And there are times where President Trump can get really hyperbolic about this, but a leak like this is just designed to embarrass him, to embarrass the administration, to harm the relationship with Mexico and the relationship with Australia, and basically undermine everything he's trying to do. And if you don't want to, like, then if you have that view, fine, but don't work for the White House. There's something fundamentally dishonest about it, in addition to the violation of serious national security law, to leak this stuff and have it on in the Washington Post.
You know what the White House communications office needs, Jim? Simply Safe. Simply Safe.
There you go. Did somebody break in and leak this transcript? I don't know.
Let's talk about Simply Safe. A lot of us get excited for summer because it means going on vacation or spending long days at the beach, maybe also taking kids to an amusement park. But you know what gets a burglar excited for summer? Knowing you're going to do all those things and you're going to be leaving your house empty while you go out and do those things. Summer is prime time burglary season, so now is the time to protect your home. For a limited time, you can take a whopping $100 off Simply Safe's special summer package.
This is Simply Safe's biggest ever summer sale. It has everything you need to protect your home, including an arsenal of security sensors to secure each door and window. Your system will come with a panic button, a blaring extra siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch. Your family, your home, and everything in it will stay safe around the clock. With Simply Safe, there are no long-term contracts, no installation costs, and no hidden fees. And 24/7 professional monitoring is just $14.99 a month.
Such a good deal. This summer, see what Simply Safe can do for your home. Get $100 off your summer security package at simplysafe.com/ricochet. But you've got to hurry. This offer ends soon. simplysafe.com/ricochet to get your $100 off. SimpliSafe.com. That's simplysafe.com/ricochet for $100 off your purchase of your new home security system. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And this certainly has strong streaks of bad in it as well. And it's no surprise whatsoever, but it should be a wake-up call for Congress. Bad news for people who like to have health insurance. First of all, health insurer Aetna announced Thursday that it would completely withdraw from the Obamacare exchanges in 2018 after seeing its profits soar from reducing its participation this year. The company said during an earnings call that it was withdrawing from the exchange in Nevada, the last state it had considered staying in. Aetna was leaving the possibility open because it was applying for a Medicaid managed care contract, and the state gives extra consideration to insurers that participate in both programs, but in the end, they're not doing it. Also, that was courtesy, by the way, of the Washington Examiner. This is over at Hot Air. Molina Healthcare announced Wednesday that the company will be pulling out of Obamacare exchanges in Utah and Wisconsin and reducing its participation in the Washington market. The company is still considering its continued participation in other states. In those states where it does remain, Molina will be requesting a 55% increase in premiums in 2018. And then later on, it says all of this comes as Molina announced a net loss of $230 million for the second quarter. Monday, the company announced plans to lay off about 10% of its workforce. Jim, there are so many factors out there that should be a brutal kick in the butt to members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. But unfortunately, it hasn't worked so far. Maybe this will provide some impetus.
there's a good reason why Americans do not feel particularly warm and fuzzy towards health insurance companies. You never come to them when you're in a good mood. Generally, you have some sort of, you know, you've had some sort of ailment or injury and you need them to pay for it. And you'd like for them to pay. Ideally, you'd like them to pay for all of it. They very rarely will do so. And in fact, it just feels like even the process of getting them to pay for their share of what you thought they had agreed to pay for feels like an endless process of filling out forms and them, you know, mailing you stuff. But it's different from what they said and all that kind of stuff. Now, I can't help but notice, Greg, that Aetna is saying it expects profits from anywhere from $9.45 to $9.55 a share this year, up from a previous forecast of $8.80 to $9. Now, I'm glad, okay, I don't want to go out of business, I don't want that stuff, but the flip side is you keep saying, oh, these patients, they're so expensive, we can't afford to cover them anymore. And this is all happening under in law which was enacted, which everybody in the entire country was legally required to purchase the product that they offer. And that many of us who had said, you know, this, we don't like government and big business getting in bed together. We just don't trust that this is going to work out, that it's going to be as good as everybody's promising. We don't like the idea of citizens being legally required to purchase a product from a private company. You know, but the insurance company said, no, trust us. This is awesome. We are signing on. This is going to be great. You're going to love it. And now here they are. They're saying, oh, we can't handle these sick people. Well, wait, that was why it was all part of the deal. Why are they suddenly, you know, like we tried to save them from this. Every Republican who opposed Obamacare was like, what are you doing? This is going to be terrible. You never want to get in bed with the government. It's like getting in bed with the devil. You're never going to, you know, I'll stop the metaphor right there. And here they are. So they're abandoning certain counties. Some of them are basically all of a sudden they say, well, this is a terrible deal and we're stepping out at the time when Americans have been legally required to purchase their products. It is baffling. It is frustrating. It is further indication this is not that Obamacare is not a well-oiled machine and that people are generally not happy with it. And it is in great need of replace, particularly in the individual market. But hey, we can't do that because John McCain, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins don't like the current version. And it's back to square one. So there we are. We could call this just instead of the crazy martini, the depressing martini. Then we could have flipped those two today, Greg.
Might be so. Yeah, I don't think anybody's got a ton of sympathy for the insurance companies. They should have known what they were getting into. But their woes end up being the woes of the American people, whether it's the individual market, which is clearly cratering. But what you don't hear a lot about is the group plans, the employer plans also. A lot higher premiums, a lot higher deductibles. And it's just a mess all the way around.
By the way, Greg, does it seem like the insurance companies, whenever you deal with them, it always feels like they're like, oh, you didn't read the fine print. Look at page 11. You didn't recognize that under that, you know, your arm is severed, but we actually don't have to pay for that. We just can, you know, tape it up with Scotch tape or something. That now their complaint with Obamacare is that they didn't read the fine print.
If only we didn't have to suffer their own consequences, I'd be happy to let them exactly. Twist in the wind.
Exactly. If it only was them, we would we'd kind of chuckle at the irony. But we are, Greg.
We'll see if anything happens. Based on what we've seen to date in this Congress, I'm not holding my breath. Jim, on that thoroughly depressing note, have a great day. Stay safe and try to stay out of the hospital. And I'll see you tomorrow.
See you Friday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, simplysafe.com/ricochet. Tune in on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.